Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the latest update from head coach Mike McCarthy on Jordy Nelson, the Packers star wide receiver. It's what everybody's wanting to know and what everybody's going to be following here throughout the week. Injured ribs, and there's actually a chance that Nelson could practice on Saturday and maybe play in the game. Now, I think the chances are fairly slim that that is going to happen, but Mike McCarthy did not rule out Jordy Nelson for the trip to Dallas for the NFC divisional playoffs. And I think first and foremost, we have to say just the fact that we're talking about it in this way is great news for Jordy Nelson, considering what that hit could have done.
Yeah, and I think Mike McCarthy's been pretty forthright in the past when there is a significant injury of not, you know, delaying the process. He'll say right off the bat, he might not say, okay, this guy's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks, but he'll say he won't be playing this Sunday. You think about that with, I remember Demetri Goodson, Sam Shields, a lot of those guys, he had that kind of rhetoric in the Monday after games in which someone has sustained an injury. So for the fact that he is leaving that door open is a good sign for this Packers offense. Now, again, we have to see which course this week is going to take and what his prognosis is. As you said yesterday on the show, I'm sure there's still a lot of tests going on trying to figure out exactly, one, what exactly is going on with him, and two, what is his prospects of playing, you know, through the injury. Those are things that have to be shuffled out. The one, if there is one silver lining for the Packers, the way that the other receivers played in that game and the fact that they get a full week now to prepare without Jordy Nelson, you know what he can do if he can play, but if he can't, certainly this offense will have its work cut out for them.
Yeah, and I think if you're the Packers wide receivers, anybody on the Packers offense, I think you go into this week of preparation for the Cowboys saying, we're not going to have Jordy Nelson. Right. And if at the end of the week, if he is somehow recovered enough to be able to play, you say, hey, great, that's a bonus. It's pretty easy to work a guy like Jordy Nelson into the game plan if you get that opportunity. Certainly the Packers, Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb combining for 241 yards, I think it was,
correct,
with four touchdown catches from Aaron Rodgers, all of which happened after Nelson left the game against the Giants after the hit there early in the second quarter. So we know the storyline, the national media storyline this week is going to be, well, the Packers offense wasn't the same in 2015 without Jordy Nelson. You know what those guys in the locker room are going to believe is, hey, what we just did last Sunday without Jordy Nelson is what matters as we look forward to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, to me, and again, this is only one man's opinion, it's apples and oranges comparing the two, because yes, they didn't have Jordy Nelson in 2015, but Devontae Adams was dealing with an ankle injury that bothered him the whole year. Randall Cobb was dealing with a shoulder injury that he never led on to what exactly he was experiencing until kind of giving you a glimpse of it after the season.
Right.
Jared Cook was not in this offense. This is a different offense. These are different weapons than what they had in 2015, and you could make the argument, and using that game against the Giants as somewhat proof towards that, that this team is more well-equipped to handle his loss than it was a year ago. So this is going to be a big challenge, no question, trying to prepare and mentally get ready for what has been the best team in the NFC throughout the course of the season on a consistent basis. But the one thing that works for the Packers well is that Aaron Rodgers being able to put his injuries aside and being able to persevere through this last half of the season, you just have the feeling right now that regardless of whether or not 87 is on the field, they're going to find a way to make this thing still go.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of other injury updates to pass along. Ty Montgomery, who left the Giants game for a little while there with what looked like a lower leg injury of some kind when he was tackled awkwardly, he came back into the game and finished, which I thought was a great sign. Mike McCarthy said he thinks that Montgomery should be able to practice on Wednesday when the team gets back on the practice field. Blake Martinez, who exited with a knee injury, sounds like things are looking pretty good for him as well, that he might be able to practice as early as Wednesday. On that defensive side of the ball, I know there's never really been one of those guys that's been the bell cow, so to speak, at inside linebacker for the Packers, but having that rotation and the different options with Jake Ryan, Joe Thomas, and Blake Martinez, and then you've always got Clay Matthews as a potential, emergency guy, whatever you want to call it, to shift inside there. just having everybody available, I think, is something that helps this defense and it helps Dom Capers.
It's been big, Mike, too. When you look at the beginning of the season, what was the number one thing we were questioning? The fact that they cut Sam Barrington and during final cuts, they went with only three inside linebackers. I think there was some concern going into the year of, okay, does one injury put you out of that position? Does it change things? And the Packers have been fortunate that although all three of those guys have dealt with things this year, it hasn't been at the same time. It's all been in different intervals for the most part.
Right.
There was a little bit of overlap with Ryan and Martinez. But for the most part, now you get those guys going. It looks like Jake Ryan's back to playing the way he wants to play. One other positive thing that came out of that locker room, too, on Monday, Mike, Demaryius Randall saying that this is the best he's felt on a Monday all season. So for him playing through, I believe that was the shoulder injury yet that he was questionable with, right? Or was it the knee? Maybe it was both.
I think it was a little bit of both, actually.
He's dealt with a lot this year, said that that was the best he'd felt coming out of a game. That's really big, too, especially when he played every defensive snap.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, let's throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, we've actually neglected to mention yesterday's show in reviewing the victory over the Giants that Aaron Rodgers added his name in another spot in the Packers playoff record book. Throwing for four touchdown passes, he becomes the first quarterback in franchise history to do that in two different postseason games. Interestingly, he did that in his very first postseason game of his career in Arizona in the 2009 wildcard game that became that big shootout, went to overtime, and all that. But another four-touchdown game in the playoffs for Aaron Rodgers. And, boy, you just wonder what else he might be able to accomplish here if the Packers can keep this rolling.
Yeah, it's amazing. And there's so many times, Mike, and we've done it now, 107 episodes. You run out of ways to compliment him. And, Mike McCarthy's kind of fallen into the same thing, too. He joked about that 2 weeks ago, that there's just really no words at this point. The one thing I will say is that I think this season proved, even if it wasn't already in set in stone, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's now been a starting quarterback, I think, as long as Steve Young was. And he's been able to do what he's done now at such a high level for such a long time. Guys don't have these kind of careers. Nobody's done this.
Yeah.
Nobody's done it with as much efficiency as he's done it with. These runs that he gets on, Brian Bulaga talked about it after the game. It's like, you can't even say this is the best football he's ever played because there's been so many of these stretches that he's played. I don't want to say the thing again that Packer fans are spoiled because it goes without saying, but this game is not that easy. And he makes it look like it is. And I think that's the ultimate testament to a guy that is one of the best, if not the best player in the NFL.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy was asked on Monday if this is the best he's ever seen Rodgers play. And, it's a tough question to answer when Mike McCarthy has been his head coach throughout his entire career as a starter. McCarthy did reference 2011. Which really was an incredible run for the entire season, in which he set the NFL single season record with a 122 plus passer rating for the year. So that was probably, if you look at it statistically, the best really extended stretch of his career. But this one, as McCarthy said, and as I think you and I would agree, this one, these last seven games, eight games really, if you count the Washington game, that was the final game of the losing streak. This one ranks right up there. There's no question about it. That being said, it doesn't look like, as disappointing as this may be for Packers fans, it doesn't look like Aaron Rodgers is going to get the MVP. The MVP votes have been turned in. It will not be announced until the night before the Super Bowl. But the Associated Press all-pro voting came out last week, as we talked about with David Bakhtiari getting second team along with HaHa Clinton-Dix. And Matt Ryan was a clear first-team all-pro quarterback in that voting, which most likely means Matt Ryan is going to get the MVP.
At the very least, that's what the tradition has been the last few years. The same voters, for the most part, contributing to both of those selections. Aaron Rodgers in 2014 kind of ran away with the first team honors when he won the MVP. I think you saw it last year with Cam Newton. I'm sure there's a handful of other moments in recent history of which it's also been reflected. Whatever the case may be, I mean, you can't take anything away from Matt Ryan. He had a phenomenal season. 117 passer rating. I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's the first time he's been over 100 in his career. I know he's been in the 90s a couple times, but I don't know if he's actually eclipsed 100 until this season.
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I'd have to look that up. Yeah. But certainly the 117, only five rating points below Rodgers, you know, single season NFL record. There's a lot to be said for that.
And I think there was two games that it was under 90 he had out of 16.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Over at least a 90 passer rating, just the efficiency he played with. They dealt with some injuries too. Julio Jones was out. You know, Devontae Freeman missed some time. They had some changes on the offensive line, although they did generally improve in that area. He's definitely worthy of it if that's how it shuffles out. But again, as I've said on the show and as I said in the Insider Inbox, Aaron Rodgers played like an MVP this season. And even if he doesn't get the honors, it doesn't mean that he wasn't deserving of it.
Yeah, I would agree. I just think it's so exciting to look ahead and see what he might be able to do here. As we've talked about, when you look at the performances Rodgers has put up against some of the top defenses in the league over the last month, I take nothing away from the Dallas Cowboys, but the Dallas Cowboys defense doesn't rank, and we'll talk about this as we go on through the week, it doesn't rank anywhere near where the Seattle Seahawks and the New York Giants defenses rank. Now, the Packers are going on the road as opposed to playing them at Lambeau Field, so you factor that in as well. But I just think this is it's such an exciting time to see a quarterback and the leader of this team playing so well.
Yeah, it is, and especially this time of the season and being able to get down the stretch here, It is, again, I don't want to say it's hard to envision him playing any better than he has in the last month, but it is incredible to see him be able to put this together, even in a game like against the Giants where he got off to a slow start and the offense got off to a slow start, how they put that behind them and had a really power-packed last three quarters, and they finished the game strong. You want to play a full 60 minutes, but the way that they bounced back from those first 15, the resiliency that they showed without Jordy Nelson, a lot of that goes back to Aaron Rodgers, and when he's hot, man, there are not many who are better than him.
Yeah, and you said the word resiliency. That's really been the theme of this Packers team all throughout 2016. So with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, on the defensive side of the ball, it's worth talking about a veteran player here who was brought in really to do exactly what he's done in these big postseason games. I'm talking about Julius Peppers. And we were just looking at the statistics before we turned on the cameras here for today's show. Julius Peppers has played five postseason games for the Packers, and he's got 4.5 sacks in those five postseason games. You can't ask too much more. He's a big-time player who comes through when you need him to.
Yeah, he definitely does. Mike, would you say that was the top five, top four?
He's actually fourth in Packers postseason history already with those 4.5 sacks. He trails only Clay Matthews, who extended his franchise record to 11 sacks now in 13 postseason games. And then Reggie White and Nick Perry are 2 and 3 on the list. Now, that's just to clarify, this is sacks since 1982 when sacks became official, so the Lombardi stats and everything and all those postseason games are not included. But since sacks became an official stat a little over three decades ago, Julius Peppers, already in postseason history for the Packers, got his name in the record books.
Yeah, what does that say about that pass rush, too, for the Packers, that Matthews, Peppers, and Perry are all up in there, and Perry only doing, I think it's 6 sacks in 6 games now. Had 6 and 5, you know, before this year. So for them to get that kind of contribution, that's huge. That's what Dom Capers' defense is based around. But looking at Julius Peppers specifically, I know I was asking Kenny Clark about him a little bit in the locker room on Monday. Clark was 6 years old when Peppers started his NFL career. He wasn't even familiar with his basketball career at North Carolina. He knew he's a tremendous basketball player, knows he plays in the offseason, but wasn't aware of that. When he was kind of saying, when he thought of Julius Peppers, he remembers him with the Chicago Bears. He didn't even recall him from the Carolina Panthers, just based on, you know, with him being a younger guy. And, you know, that was his heyday, was when Peppers was doing his thing in Chicago. And that was already the second half of his career. To see what he's done, how he's energized this locker room, the fact he's been picked now 3 consecutive years as a playoff captain,
yep,
on a team with so many homegrown players, with so many guys that have come up through this system, don't know any other organizations other than Green Bay, and he's done that, and he's earned that respect. This is Julius Peppers. This is what the Packers signed up for in March of 2014, and he's really paid them off in how he's produced.
Yeah, and you talk about a guy, a veteran guy. We don't know how much longer Julius Peppers is going to play. He hasn't discussed his future at all. But he went to a Super Bowl, I believe it was his second year in the league with Carolina. And since then, you look at all the close calls. 2010, he's in the NFC Championship with the Bears, losing to the Packers. Yeah. 2014, he gets to the NFC Championship in his first year with the Packers, comes up a little bit short. A lot of guys in that locker room are motivated, but there may not be another one as motivated in terms of where he is in his career than Julius Peppers to try to get back to another Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl, which he has not done, because the one time he did go very early in his career, the Carolina Panthers lost right at the end of the ballgame.
Yeah, and I remember talking to a lot of the guys from the Packers 2010 draft class for a story I did about 2 or 3 years ago, and how, you know, when you enter the league that way, when you're that young, you just think that this is how it's always going to be. You're always yep, going to make these runs. You're always going to win a Super Bowl. It doesn't work like that. You can be Julius Peppers playing for 15 years, 9-time Pro Bowler during that stretch. The 5th all-time leading sack leader.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't happen. At least it doesn't happen until your 15th season. So for Peppers, I know there's a lot of emotion. As Clark said, everybody in that locker room wants to get him that ring. That is something that motivates a lot of players, understanding what he's given to this game and wanting to make sure that he secures that. And for him to also play the way he has. I know there was a plan with him. I know they tapered him. But for him to show up the way he did during Nick Perry's injury, during Clay Matthews' injury, and again in that game against the Giants, that's the Julius Peppers that has always been there. And, yeah, he still looks like a 20-year-old kid out there.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think Peppers is totally on board with this rest and tapering him and all that. I mean, he's a guy who just, he doesn't like to miss practice. He likes to be out there. But it's one of those things where I think he's sat back and said, okay, you guys are the boss. I'm gonna listen to what you think is best. And it's hard to argue with the results right now.
Yeah, and the thing is too, Mike, you can have production in September. It's cool. It adds to the stats. It all looks the same. But you need to have those guys ready and performing at the end of the year. A lot of those young players, they learn throughout the course of the season. But Peppers, there isn't a whole lot to learn at this point. It's about doing what he does and making sure that he stays healthy while doing it. And the Packers and him, and through this plan, they've gotten to this point.
Yeah, and we talked yesterday about how that sack in the second quarter with the Giants backed up was a huge play in the game. He had a couple of deflected passes, just doing a lot of things for this Green Bay defense. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we'll wrap up the show today by going a little bit into more detail on just how the Packers were able to keep the clamps on Odell Beckham Jr., holding him, as we talked about yesterday, to the 4 catches for 28 yards. I went back through the defensive film, as I like to do. My What You Might Have Missed segment on Packers.com focuses on this. Most of the time, yes, it was Ladarius Gunter with some safety help over the top. But Dom Capers threw some changeups at Odell Beckham and Eli Manning in terms of how they defended Beckham. And you have to think that, you know, that strategy maybe just prevented, or at least helped to prevent, Beckham from getting into any kind of a rhythm or any kind of a flow, because he never knew for sure exactly, and Manning maybe never knew for sure exactly how the Packers were going to handle it.
Yeah, they definitely varied the coverage. There's no question about that. And some of the concepts that they used, you know, mixing the zone and man, and also with the safety help over the top, as we discussed yesterday, occasionally bringing another guy up to the line of scrimmage to disrupt him and get in two-on-one situations to see if you could potentially frustrate him at all. That's really difficult for any receiver to combat, just because there's no familiarity there. There's no consistency. It continually is evolving and changing. But the one thing that I thought was really important is the Packers executed it.
Yep.
When you mix things up like that, it can get complicated. You can have mental errors. You can have issues with you know, changing it up. And when you're passing certain guys off, Packers played pretty lights out against Beckham. Yes, he did drop a couple passes. Yes, there were some missed opportunities. But as we mentioned before, there wasn't a whole lot of chances that he had where guys were just completely falling off. There was always somebody in his vicinity throughout that game.
Yeah, it was interesting to see on the film all those changeups they threw. You mentioned, you know, sending another guy up to the line of scrimmage and double teaming him, you know, like he's a punt gunner. Kentrell Bryce ran up to the line of scrimmage and did that, joining Gunter as a double team. There was one play on a third down early in the game. Gunter's not even on him. Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix is kind of shadowing him, and Morgan Burnett is actually in the middle of the defensive line looking like he's going to blitz. He drops off, and it becomes a double team with the two safeties. Clinton-Dix and Burnett double team Beckham. One play, Beckham's in the slot, and they actually blitz Ladarius Gunter off the slot, and then Clinton-Dix has to pick him up there. And then there were also some plays where Gunter was left one-on-one, and you know, Manning was trying to take advantage of those. A lot of different things, and really Manning and Beckham just never found any kind of a timing, never really got their timing down throughout the ballgame.
Yeah, it was that game in specific that really pointed out to me, and I think it should for a lot of, you know, just casual viewers, about how complicated this game really is, and the level of which Dom Capers and Eli Manning are operating at. That's a really complicated chess game.
Yeah.
Some people are just like, well, why don't you just do this, or why don't you just do that? All the things that they incorporated, and to be able to not only see that and coach it, but then have the players execute it, that wasn't easy. And the Packers did it, and it worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, and it's certainly not easy against a veteran quarterback like Eli Manning, who's seen everything. This guy's won a couple of Super Bowls. And the fact that that the Packers really kind of kept him off balance for the most part. And fortunately, a couple of those drops early in the game, you know, really kind of threw the Giants off, and then they never really found themselves. But we got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.